KVU Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KVU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KVU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. It is nearly exactly 10 a.m. and time for Valley Views, after which we'll hear Flashpoint, so stay tuned right here.
Hi, I'm Dale Holliday, coming to you from Corvallis, Oregon, in the bountiful Willamette Valley. Welcome to my show, Valley Views, a forum for sharing relevant topics relating to people and issues in the Willamette region. The NAACP here in Corvallis sponsored an event last year called Living the Black Experience in Corvallis. There were three sessions, all well attended. I was a panelist at the first session in which I spoke about mistaken identity, that is, having white people mistake me for other black women who look nothing like me. The sponsors also wanted panelists to be prepared to talk about encounters that we've had here in Corvallis with white people that disturbed us. I didn't have to think long and hard to create that list. Although, let me say here and now, these encounters are not unique to Corvallis. And, as I will always say, I am not speaking for all African Americans, but I do know many African Americans who have experienced these same interactions with white people, wherever they've lived, that I'm about to talk about. I am calling my piece, 10 Encounters with White People in Corvallis. I should add a dash saying, and every other city or town I've lived in the U.S. since I was born. It's about white people behaving in a manner that reminds me that they aren't used to interacting with someone that looks like me. Their fear and discomfort shows and serves as a reminder to me that I don't belong in their world, which they perceive as the world. When does this happen? When I'm shopping in downtown Corvallis or walking through my neighborhood, the one I've lived in and walked around for over 4 years now. Encounter number one. I'm walking past a house on Polk Street on my way to my gym, just as the door opens and I see an elderly, energetic-looking white couple emerge. They see me, actually stop mid-step, with a startled look on their faces, and linger in their doorway, staring at me, hesitating to come out until I'm a safe distance away. Encounter number two. I'm walking along Taylor Street and see a female and male college-aged folks approaching me in the opposite direction. They see me and they too get that startled, panic-stricken look on their faces and immediately cross to the other side of the street. Not to enter a house or cross diagonally to the next block, but to simply not have to walk by me. Encounter three. I'm walking along 12th Street and pass a homeowner who lives just five houses from where my husband and I have lived the past 4 years. He's seen my husband and me dozens and dozens of times, and all he does is glare as we walk past, as if making sure we get past his home without starting any trouble before he can go on about his business. Encounter number four. I'm walking on the sidewalk along the Kings Boulevard side of Fred Meyer, and once again see two female and male college-age folks approaching me in the opposite direction. The girl sees me, and once again there's that panic attack look as if she's being faced down by a grizzly bear. Despite there being plenty of room on the sidewalk to pass by each other, she has her eyes so fixed on me that she literally runs headfirst into a tree. Encounter number five. I'm walking along Polk Street near 9th and see a college-aged white male cross Polk with a trash barrel, setting it out for the next day trash pickup. He pauses slightly in seeing me approach, but when I get to his location, he says, "Good morning." I too respond with a "Good morning." I'm not surprised that he has an accent that suggests he's from a Scandinavian region. He appears curious, even a tad cautious, but seemingly not as afraid as my fellow Americans. Not that Europeans have transcended racism, not at all. But it's a fact that during my travels and work outside of this country, I've been respected as a person and businesswoman far more genuinely and easily than in the U.S. Encounter 6. I entered a shop in downtown Corvallis. One of the clerks, a white woman of about my age, approaches me with a puzzled look and asks, "May I help you?" But the inflection is not one of asking a customer what they may be looking for, but rather suggesting that I must be in the wrong store. I must be lost because no one who looks like me shops there. Encounter 7. I entered a woman's clothing store in downtown Corvallis. There are two white clerks. I'm there for 5 minutes and see them approach every other woman who enters after I do, who are all white, to ask if they can be of any help. But neither of them approach me. I'm right in dead center of the store. They even walk past me several times to ask other shoppers if they can be of service. I left, figuring if they don't want my business, I'm certainly not going to give it to them. Encounter 8. My white husband and I entered a hardware store in downtown Corvallis early on a Saturday when no one else was in the store. We walked around and around looking for a particular item. There's a senior-aged man there who is quite surly when we finally do ask him what the location of the product is. He says, "Over there," sweeping his hand in a vague motion toward some unidentifiable direction. When I asked exactly where, he bristled and did nothing to clarify except to repeat his inadequate directions. Meanwhile, a young white woman entered the store and he immediately put all his attention toward her, even though she didn't even ask for help. We left, have never been back, and never will. We'll buy our hardware needs somewhere else in town. Too bad, because my husband and I are the type who prefer to support local businesses before we spend dollars in corporate settings. But we're not going to shop where we're treated like second-class citizens either. Encounter number 9. I moved my mom here about a year ago. I was shopping around for a caregiving agency to help my mom with some of her daily needs. I called two agencies and made arrangements to interview them. I told one that I'd be in at 12 noon that day to talk with the owner. Now keep in mind, this business is not a walk-in business, so it's not like hordes of people come through the door. I arrived promptly at 12 noon. The owner saw me and asked me if I wanted to fill out an application to be a caregiver. I immediately wondered if she would have made that assumption if I was white. I'll never know. I told her that no, I'm the one who called and said I'd be here to meet you at 12. I'm not looking for a caregiving position. I'm seeking to hire one. She blushed because she knew that she had made an ignorant assumption. Encounter 10. Despite being annoyed about that greeting that I received at the caregiving agency, I did select them to assist my mom because I liked the quality of their caregivers. Some time passed and they hired an office manager that I frequently had friendly correspondence with via email for months. She decided that it would be great to meet me sometime. I didn't schedule an exact time, but when the time came, I walked into that office and the manager mistook me for Amy, a made-up name, one of the caregivers who work there. In other words, someone she saw on nearly a daily basis. It so happens that I already knew Amy. She has dreads down to her waist, and when I looked at this office manager like she was crazy, she turned red and said she thought I was Amy with a haircut. Aside from the extreme hairstyle difference, Amy also has a round face as opposed to my oval-shaped face, skin a few shades lighter than mine, with unmistakable red tones, who has a completely different style of dressing, and about 30 pounds difference in our weight, and 3 inches taller, and oh, about 15 or more years younger than I. It's nice to know that I'm young-looking, but this was ridiculous. During my impromptu visit to this caregiving agency, I was bringing chocolates to the staff as a thanks for the great work they were doing with my mom. Frankly, I didn't feel like sharing that chocolate after the crack she made, but I did leave the chocolates. I also remarked to the manager that I was astonished that she had mistaken me for one of her staff, and given the reasons I cited earlier. After that, her tone kind of cooled toward me on the emails. They became less friendly and more clipped. Got all business with me all of a sudden. So those are 10 encounters that I've had in Corvallis that were a little weird. I'd like to talk a little bit about how these encounters made me feel. In my own neighborhood, it made me feel like I'm a curiosity or an annoyance. That I'm someone who is dangerous somehow, uncivilized, or a threat. that I'm not one of the fold or worthy of being in their neighborhood or vicinity. I just don't belong there. It also made me feel that angry that I'm put in a position where I am supposed to make them feel comfortable somehow. And what would that look like? Am I supposed to walk around smiling all the time? Am I supposed to cast my eyes downward as to indicate that I'm passive or obedient? Not going to happen. As a customer, it made me feel like it's assumed that I can't afford to shop there, that I'm lesser than the other white patrons and unworthy of their customer service, that I'm not possibly a customer, that I must be someone looking for work, or that all black women look, sound, and move alike. Now, in terms of the encounters with college-aged white people, it just makes me feel how utterly limited their education has been in terms of diversity. Yes, that word is given a lot of lip service, and that generation knows the politically correct words to say, but they, like those before them, are still trapped in their racist beliefs, perceptions, and fears. It also makes me feel that these young people are supposedly the next leaders of America, which means they will carry these racist, fearful perceptions into their future workplaces. Those who have hiring authority will hire only those who look like them because that's the narrow scope of their comfort level. Also, if they have kids, which they assuredly will, they'll pass these concepts along to their offspring and will not encourage or approve of their kids befriending those who are not of their own demographic. In terms of all these encounters, I feel like it's a painful reminder that I'm an outsider, that I somehow don't belong here. And it's very disorienting and stressful as I go about my normal course of business, as any white person does without a second thought. I can't help but think about the vast variety of media outlets that spew negative stereotypes of black people every second of the day, day in and day out. Movies, TV, blogs, news, the biased, fear-based, endless monologue with the purpose of making my people out to be criminals, thugs, shrill, violent, ignorant, lazy, or inhuman creatures, or all the above. And then I do become very discouraged about the future positive change of race relations in this country. Hate to say it, but that's my honest perceptions. So there you have it. Thank you for listening. I would love to hear any feedback or thoughts that you have about this matter. You can contact me at valleyviews@kboo.org. That's valleyviews@kboo.org. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Valley Views. I'm your host, Dale Holliday, and I'd love to hear from you. Comments, questions, ideas for future topics, or other matters you'd like explored. Email me at valleyviews@kboo.org. That's valleyviews@kboo.org. I look forward to being with you again next time. And remember, as Doctor Who once said, I'm not in charge, but I'm full of ideas. Bye.
Flashpoints unmasking the corporate media on its biggest lie of all, the ethnic cleansing of Palestine by the Zionist State of Israel. We'll share more excerpts in this regard from the new hard-hitting documentary, The Occupation of the American Mind. And we'll also feature the newest edition of the Electronic Intifada with Nora Barros Friedman. I'm Dennis Bernstein, all this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.
The
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Coming up next, we're going to turn our attention to another subject that we've spent the last 30 years on doing drumbeat coverage, and that is the vicious, illegal, expanding occupation of Palestine. Right now, we're going to play you excerpts from the brand new documentary, Occupation of the American Mind, How American Media is an Active Partner in the Ugly and Illegal Occupation of Palestine. This is a hell of a documentary. Stay tuned and listen to this.
On July 8th, 2014, Israel launched a devastating military attack on the Gaza Strip. Over the course of 51 days, the Israeli military dropped nearly 20,000 tons of explosive on Gaza, a densely populated area the size of Philadelphia, killing over 2,000 Palestinians and wounding tens of thousands more. The overwhelming majority of these casualties were civilians.
This strip of land is being bombarded from the air, sea, and land.
Israel launched at least 160 strikes on the Gaza Strip.
And there's one less hospital in Gaza now. Israel today flattened Wafa Hospital.
The sheer scale of the attack sparked outrage and condemnation around the world.
Israel's month-long pounding of Gaza shocked many people around the world. Mass demonstrations have been held in many of the world's major cities.
But in the United States, the story was different. Polls showed the American people holding firm in their support for Israel.
This is the latest CNN ORC poll of Americans. Shows 57% of those polls say Israel's action in Gaza is justified. 34% say unjustified.
These numbers were striking, but they weren't new. Over the course of a conflict in which Palestinian casualties have far outnumbered Israeli casualties, the American people have considered